We don't need more gear. We're punk rock. We can use less gear. Are we ready?
Sure.
Yay. Welcome to Head Full of Hannibal, your Baltimore-based Fannibal podcast. This is Amy.
I'm Jen.
We're joined by producer Justin. Yay. And we are back after a really long break. Because 2018 was all about really long breaks and
don't
travel.
Don't call it a comeback.
No. That's what they do, all like the K-pop stuff. They call them comebacks every time they do a something.
Really?
Yeah. It's called every time. It's a comeback. You could have put something out in like 2 weeks and you do your promo cycle or whatever. It's probably like quarterly to like twice a year. And every time it's called a comeback.
Even when they don't announce their retirement beforehand, like Bowie used to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like he perfected it.
He kind of did.
But yeah, so I saw, one thing, this band I listened to is they're doing, someone's like, oh, hey, they might do a comeback in February. I'm like, but they, like, in the fall already?
Yeah, no.
But
that's
it makes it, they do so much hype.
Marketing.
It's all hype and marketing. Then you buy stuff, except for me, because I don't buy albums, because I don't want more crap. So we are here. Today we are drinking, it's called a Crimson and Clover Sparkler. I saw an ad for its Kettle One pomegranate rose vodka recipe, that was going down Facebook.
It's some fancy vodka and it smells really good.
Yeah. And then I couldn't find the recipe again. It's not on their website or it wasn't working. So I looked it up and found it on Goop.
Womp womp.
I know. Can't believe I willingly went to the Goop website.
You didn't buy any like magic moon dust powder or jade eggs or anything?
No, there will be no steaming of anything. Justin, what were we joking about steaming things?
For this.
Yeah. What was it, this? I don't even remember what the joke was. I'm like, no, it's not happening. No, wait, what did you say about tea when you came in?
Tea. Oh, that it's a desperate beverage where it feels like people just forage for things in the woods and then boil them in water because they had nothing else to drink.
We had tea when Jen came in because it's cold. And we were both like, well, I mean, it's fine. It works.
Whatever. This is better, this thanks. Beverage.
I just didn't delicious. Think you'd want to come into like a cold cocktail after.
Yeah, that's good. Now that we have the fire going. And
Maximum Hygge. Yes. We have our pine-scented candle from our trip to New York.
It's just missing Mads.
I know. I mean, he could be here. It's a little cold for PorchCon, though. We'll work on that one. So I have lots of stuff. I was saying to Jen that I've been emailing myself links. So first off, I want to get this one out. Love Crime Books, who did the Radiance Anthology, has a new project coming up called the Ravage Anthology. And their Kickstarter will be starting on February 15th. Radiance was all about Will. It's a fan book. And they described it as a collection of stories and art, envisioning and conjuring the incarnations of Will's becoming fueled by blood and breath. It was pretty cool. We backed it and picked it up when we were at Red Dragon Con a year ago and got to meet the people who worked on it, who were really cool. Mm-hmm. They put a lot of work into it.
Yeah.
When they were talking about, they were like, they'd never done it before and they learned everything from scratch. It was very impressive. So Ravage will focus on Hannibal Lecter, resplendent in his ravage and his cultivated savagery. Coming out later this year.
Yay! That's exciting.
So I will link to both their Tumblr where you can get updates, and there is a newsletter you can sign up for.
Yeah.
For details.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one because I think writing Hannibal, especially like the interior thoughts of Hannibal, is such a difficult thing. Mm. I can't even imagine how I would approach that.
No.
So
I'm not really a writer.
No, me neither.
Well, and I find reading stuff that I actually feel like overall I read better Hannibal than I had, like across the breadth of stuff, better representations of Hannibal than of Will. Because I think sometimes Will gets fluffified a little bit, like he's made a little too bratty or a little too precious or a little too something. And I think there's like a finer line. I feel like you can play with Hannibal a little bit more.
Right.
Be a little bit more over the top. And like the character voice. So, but neither, I don't think either of them are easy.
No.
Oh, no, not at all.
No.
That's where I've talked about it, I think, like when I'm reading, like kind of chasing fix, like I'll read somebody's stuff and then look at what they bookmarked and mm-hmm. go read that. And then you kind of, you know, as you hop through. And sometimes I'll find that I'm reading stuff and as I go from writer to writer, it's sometimes it moves away from the voice of the character that I like uh-huh. the best.
Yeah.
And then I have to kind of go back to what I really love and right. sort of reconnect with how I like them written mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. search out that sort of version.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain.
But no, I mean, I understand that. Yeah, I totally do.
I love a good coffee shop AU. But sometimes I'm like, this is just not really the Hannibal and Will that I'm looking for.
Well, yeah, for me, it's like sometimes like, oh, do they have to be that awful? So it's nice to read something where they're mm-hmm. not that awful. But in the end, like, I always want them to be that awful. And then yeah. it's like back to the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be there. Speaking of fix, I have a recommendation. Pardon my French. It's Langues des Chats by Lectorisms. It covers pretty much the Futamono and Yakimono episodes, but it's where Hannibal, still pining after Will, ends up taking in a stray cat because he needs somebody to talk to. And in the kitchen scene, when Will comes back with the gun and points it at Hannibal, he ends up getting distracted by the cat, which makes Hannibal blurt out the fact that Abigail is not dead.
Wow.
Which, of course, is going to change everything.
Oh, my God. I have to read that.
Yeah. So it's a short one. I think it's like 4,000 words. Mm. So it's nice. And it's kind of interior Hannibal thought one. But, yeah, he takes in a gnarly street cat and ends up with Buddy, who he names Cat. Because he actually hadn't named it. Will's like, what's his name? He's like, oh, Cat?
It's like Granny Weatherwax.
You. There was a note at the end. Title means cat tongue because I was watching the Great British Bake Off while writing this, and they made cookies called cat tongues. And what choice did I have? None. So I looked up, and I'll link to the recipe for those cookies. They look like – it's like a biscuit. Sorry, it's British. It's a biscuit. They look like half of a Milano cookie.
Like if you cut a Milano cookie in half.
But without the chocolate or anything, just the cookie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're kind of that oval shape.
Oh!
And the recipe said you could do them with vanilla or like with orange or something. So they're like a tea biscuit. But, you know, what would it be if I wasn't liking recipes? The next thing I had that I thought was amusing was Ariel Dumas on Twitter did a thread of things we thought were fancy as kids. And it is fucking hilarious. And it was such – it just made me think of like such a contrast to Hannibal because – it's all the stuff that people are like she said, I thought Jägermeister was for sophisticated ladies because my mom sometimes sips them out of a cordial glass at bedtime. And it's like the stuff when you're a kid, you're like, that's super fancy. And you grow up and you're like, that is not fancy. I said, mine was crushed velvet bedspreads. My brother, when I was a kid and he was a teenager, he had a waterbed.
Mm-hmm.
Which I also thought was fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a crushed red velvet bedspread. And then one time we went on a car trip and we stayed at a Knight's Inn. Have you ever been at a Knight's Inn?
No.
They have like wallpaper murals on the inside that look like a castle or stuff. And the beds are crushed velvet bedspreads. And I just remember we walked in and my mom's like, it looks like a brothel.
So it's like an old school medieval times
yes.
hotel.
Yes. Except like not fancy. It's just like, it's like a Super 8, but Knight's Inn. And I was like, this is so fancy.
Like a Super 8 with a strong aesthetic opinion.
Yes. And then which somebody said they thought that when you went to a hotel and they had the bed where you could put in a quarter and it would vibrate was super God. Fancy.
Oh, I saw that. Didn't they have those bath oil beads?
Yes, like that was another one.
I remember those.
Which there was somebody commented that they sell them at like a store or somewhere. And no, it was at a salon or something. And so they snuck one out of the container and put it in their mouth to carry out. And then, it, of course, melted. Their mom was just like, didn't even punish them because they're like, yeah, that's gross. But it's really funny. I'll link to it if you need like a time waster to read.
I could totally see that as a conversation between Will and Hannibal, though, about like what Will thought was fancy when he was a kid.
It was obviously a whole spice.
What is now fancy in his life? Yeah.
There's a lot of the after 8 mints and Andy's Candies mints. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And a lot of it that you realize is because it's not like it's the only thing that was fancy is because you weren't allowed to have it. A lot of kids were like, yeah, I was only allowed one of these after dinner on Christmas. So I thought,
yeah, like at Christmas time is when they showed up and then mm-hmm. that was it.
Mm-hmm. I know. It was like I was like, what did I think was fancy? Crushed velvet bedspread. And then I'm going to put the link. Everybody knows, I'm sure, but Mass and Joe Pinna from Arctic, their AMA on Reddit, first top, most upvoted comment is, of course, would you do a season 4 Hannibal? He says, of course I would. Funniest, I think, was the asking if he could reveal anything about...
Death Stalking?
Death Stranding.
Death Stranding.
And it's just nothing. Which is smart, because he does tend to leak stuff. So yeah, I haven't read through the whole thing. I've mainly seen the highlight reel that people have reposted. But it was good. And I thought about trying to get a question in. I was like, I have nothing to ask. I have nothing intelligent to ask. I'm sure people will do great. A cool Tumblr post was from, I don't know if there's a way to pronounce this, AXMXZ. We've mentioned them before. Mm-hmm. Which was about the idea of the Ravenstag.
Mm-hmm.
And they answered that there's a similar mythological creature called the Periton, created by Jorge Luis Borges, also pardon my, I think, Spanish, for his Book of Imaginary Beings. It's said to have the head, neck, forelegs, and antlers of a stag combined with the plumage, wings, and hindquarters of a large bird, although some interpretations portray it as a deer, but coloration and a deer in all but coloration and bird's wings. It casts the shadow of a man until it kills one during its lifetime, at which time it starts to cast its own shadow. Mm. And then this person had added the comments, it's interesting that the murder motif is still there, and also we now have an explanation for why the Ravenstag also had that form of the Wendigo that was basically a black man with antlers. Will was seeing its shadow. If the Ravenstag Periton is meant to symbolize not just Will or Hannibal, but their connection, them as a couple, then the Ravenstag wouldn't start casting its own shadow until they killed together, which they now did with the dragon.
Hmm.
I love fan theory stuff.
Interesting.
Cool. Thank you. That person, AXMXE, also does Hannibal bumper stickers and magnets and decals. And we'll link to their Etsy shop because we got their.
Yeah.
This is the person who does the Hannibal Lecter for president and the Fannibal decals, which Jen got. And then I had to get one, too. Yeah. And magnets, so excellent stuff. And it also does the Snannibal snail Hannibal.
Oh yeah, the snail Hannibal stickers. Yeah. Yes, which Brian has.
Yes, of course he does. Of course. So that's all the starters I had. I'll have more things to quote later.
You do have a lot of notes. I did. Holy crap!
A lot of notes.
Oh, God.
That I didn't put together until like noon, so it took me like 45 minutes. I was like, oh shit, Jen's coming over. So we go into our recap?
Sure.
Yeah, we're doing season 2, episode 8, Suzakana, which is a small dish used to cleanse the palate, such as vegetables in vinegar or a vinegared appetizer.
Oh, yum, yum.
Yeah.
Pickles.
Pickles, but as you also see, so they start the whole thing with, you know, Jack and Will on the ice. It does not get that cold here. You can't, there's no ice fishing in Maryland.
Probably or tonight. Virginia.
It will be that cold for like 24 hours. If you see something frozen, don't walk on it. It won't hold your weight. Yeah, I don't know if anything here freezes enough to be able to walk out on it, but yeah. And their whole, you know, not even veiled conversation about reeling in Hannibal, which I just that sort of will when he's so like tight mm-hmm. and kind of vicious. Mm-hmm. And Jack is so stupidly confident.
Yes.
Jack's like, you'll take care of it. And I'm like, you are a fucking idiot. You're such a fucking idiot. But then it goes into showing Hannibal cooking. I looked up Janice's blog to see what it was, the Trouton Bleu.
Yeah.
And it's dipped in vinegar to keep the blue color.
Oh,
yeah. And the whole preparation is, yeah, you stun them, or there's other ways of killing them, or at least paralyzing them, so that, and then you gut them.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, because you want to keep, it said there's like, they have kind of a protective slimy coating mm-hmm. on them that you want to keep, and then you dip in the vinegar to help keep the color, so you get that blue. Otherwise, yeah. if you cook, I guess they go gray.
Yeah. Trout.
Yeah, and I guess you don't scale them then either. You wouldn't want to do that either.
I don't know. That dish looked completely unappetizing to me.
And they look at it when it's set down, and Jack's like, okay. I'm like, how do you even eat that?
Well, that scene, too, is the line that Hugh Dancy has to deliver. This fish looks delicious, which is in
this fish is delicious. Yeah.
Which is in the bloopers.
Like, so, say it again and mean it.
Yeah. So every time I hear him say that line, I just crack up because mm-hmm. I just hear them laughing.
And he's doing that thing where he's holding his teeth really tight together.
So he's not laughing.
His lower jaw is kind of jutting out. Like, I really don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it.
Yeah, it looks pretty unappetizing and gross.
Yeah. Well, and I looked it up. So she was playing off of the idea of engastration, which is the same idea as like a turducken or the medieval like thing in a thing,
mm-hmm.
Which is to both echo. She pointed out it echoes the murder victim,
mm-hmm.
the whole murder of the week. And I was like, but it also, because it literally means stuffing into the gastric passage, mm-hmm. which I'm like, well, that's what Hannibal did to Will.
Oh, yeah.
When he put the ear down his throat. Oh, God. That scene, it makes me gag, mm-hmm. that whole scene of that.
That's terrible.
I did notice when they were doing this scene, Will's glasses make his eyes look huge.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did notice that. It's really weird the way, yeah, he looks really bug-eyed with the mm-hmm. glasses on.
And I don't know if that was on purpose or not, if it was mm-hmm. supposed to like emphasize the fact that he's literally seeing things. He's seeing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up on a, like, stopped the episode right after I started to read up a bunch on Nietzsche. Because and I still don't understand why Hannibal's referring to the trout as a Nietzschean fish. Because of their wild thing, as opposed to farm something. I did. Oh, look, I forgot to pull the quote from Wiki. Like, I made a note to myself to do. I did end up reading about the idea of the Übermensch,
mm-hmm.
the Overman, which I'm trying to think of it in my head. I would recommend reading up on it, not trusting what I'm remembering, but is along the idea of the next step in man being the one who can kind of put aside the, I think, like the good and evil ideas of good and evil that we mm-hmm. have now. So mm-hmm. I don't know what Hannibal was talking about, but it was definitely Hannibal as sort of, as a character can kind of embody that idea. Because mm-hmm. he's like, I'm beyond what regular men mm-hmm. think about. Because I am special. Because I'm Hannibal.
Special.
But yeah, I ended up in like a 20-minute Wikipedia hole reading about Nietzsche.
Oh, God.
And then I was like, philosophy is not my strong point. I dropped out of
We'll have to get a philosophy person on here one day.
Wouldn't it be great if we knew one?
Yeah, we do. We'll get the professor on one day.
Yes. The whole barn scene, the only comment I had was so gross. Just that whole thing is fucking gross. And it makes me sad because I volunteered with horses for a while.
Yeah, I was thinking, I'm not a horse person, but I can see how this would be a really difficult episode for people who work with horses and that kind of stuff.
Ma said it was hard to watch.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know for me, like dogs and cats and stuff, I can't,
mm-hmm.
can't deal with that.
Yeah, just the... And it was interesting for me, like, them being in a space that's, like, a space I've been in more than, you know, I've never been mm-hmm. in a crime lab. I haven't really been into I've never been in a prison, but to be in, like barn space was, and they said, so when we were at Fanimal Fest this fall, they had the director and editor of this episode, whose names are, the director's it's Vincenzo, is how you pronounce it? Natali. It was edited by Michael Dougherty. They were there doing a live rewatch with commentary, and they were talking.
So cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
That's definitely Fannibal Fest, people, if y'all are listening, definitely that again. And they were talking about how it was like their coldest days that they ever shot were these scenes in this like concrete floored barn in the Toronto area, which I looked up this morning was 3 degrees this morning.
Oh my God.
So
yeah, Toronto's lovely, but yeah, not now.
I mean, it's lovely in its own way, I'm sure, but I kind of push this all together, but yeah, there's the whole like finding the horse and the dead girl, which they had to cover up because you can have tons of violence and blood but no nipples on TV. No butt crack and no nipples. And then they're back with the whole crew. I had for some reason I'd forgotten, like, Will showed up and I'm like, why is Hannibal on the scene being all philosophical? It's a chrysalis. Right. Shut up, Hannibal. But I literally liked the Price and Zeller interactions here. I just like the, like, Zeller's like, I am doing the full extent of my job. And Price is like, whatever.
Too many words.
Nobody cares.
Stop. Just stop talking.
Nobody cares. And I noticed how, you know, Hannibal manipulates the what's happening there, because he's like, obviously you're gonna need somebody who doesn't think like other people to be able to get Will back into
the
fold.
I know, they're both him and Jack are both standing there who do we get who's freshly out of prison,
who's just does not think like any other people.
Oh God, you guys.
I know they're so obvious.
Leave them alone.
So obvious. Then we have, I guess this is the introduction of Mason and Margo.
Margo in a fabulous outfit, looking fabulous.
Yes. And Mason being a piece of shit.
Yeah.
As usual. Which, yeah, I didn't understand. I remember the first time I watched this, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Which I think is probably the purpose of it, is like, what is this about?
And I hadn't read the books.
Yeah.
Before I saw it. And then Margo is talking to Hannibal. And during the live watch, they talked about how they had Catherine Isabel like deliver stuff when she first started, like in all these different ways. They'd be like, do it like this, do it this way, do it this way, to kind of
they're
nail
really
down.
Kind of like unsure about how to do Margo as a character, because they didn't want to do Margo from the books.
Yes.
Exactly. Because there are so many issues with that. And yeah,
I was reading a fan wiki and they were saying, first off, Brian was like, well, if we make Margo like she was from the books, it ends up playing into a lot of stereotypes. And then they also talked about they didn't want to get into the childhood situation with them, because they didn't want to be dealing with a child abuse storyline. They were like, let's just move everything forward, which I think is a good way of handling things.
Yeah, that book is super problematic for so many reasons. But they did a good job of redoing it, I think.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody who made those creative decisions. But yeah, they're just the fact that she had to like create this character in a new way. My comment was, she looks like Wednesday Addams here in that outfit.
I just love her. And I like, and the line delivery is so fabulous. There's the part where I think Hannibal asks her, like, well, how did that make you feel when Mason was treating you like this? And she goes, angry, I guess. And it's such a weird,
like she's totally divorced.
Yeah. It's like totally divorced from her actual feelings kind of thing, that it's fabulous. She's like, oh my God, I love her.
Yeah. Because he's like, I mean, you don't know exactly what she tried to do to him, just that she tried to do something.
Right. And she tried to hurt him.
Yeah. And for somebody to have like resorted to violence, but to be like, I guess I feel this way is a fascinating thing. But I did have the comment. I was like, Margo has found her perfect therapist. It made me wonder, how did she find him? Did they just find the most expensive therapist in Baltimore? Probably, yeah.
Probably. Yep. Yeah.
And the drive, because we've theorized that their farm is probably, I think they say it's along the Susquehanna, which is better, like 45 minutes mm-hmm. if you're up around like Havre de Grace or mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's quite a drive to come into Baltimore to see your super expensive weirdo therapist. This better be worth it. Then the sex scene.
Hannibal. Oh, right. Rolana's getting dickmatized.
I hadn't heard that term before. That's fantastic. Justin.
That's totally what's going on.
It is. Did you come up with that?
No, it's a word. Oh. It's a word people use on the internet.
No, I'm not apparently different parts of the internets right now. But from the live watch notes, they said that they wanted it to look like Fight Club, and they used the sheets because it helped, like, without having a huge budget, it made things look better.
Uh-huh.
And they filmed it in slow-mo with the camera on a crane.
Oh, weird.
And then I have another note, something about Mads doing dance moves. I guess he was like... As opposed to actual sex stuff, he was more like, let me do some modern dance. I guess that it is kind of look better.
That's funny.
But Michael Dougherty said he didn't actually have to heavily edit because they just filmed it that well.
Wow.
But I was like watching this being like, this is some artsy sex scene for network TV.
And, yeah, and not the artsiest. Like, there's more arty sex scenes coming up, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah, because we also... Is Nakachoko the one with the five-way?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there's, or no, maybe that's the other one I'm thinking of. I don't know. There's the lesbian kaleidoscope.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one. I remember watching that being like, what am I actually seeing right now? My brain might explode.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is the one which all the postcoital talk about Will. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
I know. Now let's talk about Will. He's like, now okay.
Now that we got that out of the way, let's get to the real reason we're here. Let's talk about Will. No.
No.
But I did love, like, he looks so smug and yes. so satisfied in yes. that entire discussion.
Yeah, and he says something at the end like, well, now that Will's found a good therapist again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It'll be fine.
And Alana's like, sure, he should be back in therapy with you. And I'm like, woman, really, what?
Really
dickmatized. Yes, exactly.
<He's been> dickmatized.
That's the only explanation. Or drugs. He's sliding or something somewhere.
Both.
Both things. Yes. Though I was like, man, that'd be great. I mean, I'm not going to lie. We're in the lab for the they have the victim, which mm-hmm. I'm like, this is obviously a total nod to the Silence of the Lambs scene.
Oh yeah, yeah. Where the yeah, at least there's like something in her throat, yes. and then the bird flies out, and
also the echoing the I remember when they in Silence of the Lambs when they take the moth.
Mm-hmm.
And they take it to the, I don't know what people who work with bugs are called. I forgot.
I don't know. But the Smithsonian guys who work Smithsonian with bugs. Guys,
yes.
Yeah.
And they said, the guy's like, oh, somebody really loved this. Mm-hmm. And it's that echo of like, somebody loved these animals and somebody yeah. was, you know, the healing and all that stuff was like a nice echo. Like mm-hmm. without being super duper obvious. though the... when they cut her open, that's like stuff that I have trouble watching. Those are the things that are hard for me to see.
With the
and the spreaders
and stuff. Yeah.
But it was that supposed to be a starling?
I think so. Yeah. And it was a CGI bird.
Yeah. Which is great CGI.
Yeah.
It's way better than the Ravenstag CGI, which I love the Ravenstag, but it really doesn't look great in like full shots sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like it looks better in partial shots.
Yeah.
They did a great... I think they did well with it for the season finale.
Yes.
Yeah. But some of the earlier ones... And there's like the... I think one when it's... when he's in the hospital and hears it, like, in the hallway and sees it go by the door, it was good. So, yes, excellent bird CGI. I forgot what I was thinking. I don't know. This was just, like, gross. Like,
isn't this also the lab scene where we learn that Jimmy Price has a twin?
Yeah, because he talks about how, like, something percent of people absorb their own twins, except for mine.
And he's like, I got a twin.
Who then we see in American Gods briefly. Yeah. That'll be coming back soon. So we're... Pardon me, I'm looking at my notes from Fanimal Fest. Something that they did point out when talking about the show is there was... I guess he would be considered a cinematographer. And actually, I just realized I'm assuming it's a him. Chris Burns did the close-up work shots, the inserts. So, yeah, all the real little detailed stuff. And Vincenzo credited a lot of the look of the show to that and described it as the fetishization. I don't know why I can't say this word. Fetishization of minutiae and details. Looking at beautiful images for the sake of those beautiful images.
And I'm not certain, but I'm almost certain that he did the same thing for the season one of American Gods. Like when they put the coin in the jukebox and all up close scenes.
I wonder if that's the one like
sure
the
was
ink.
That dude.
Right at the beginning, is the ink
like,
into the...
Like, all of those super up-close scenes, I'm sure it's the same dude.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet on it. Yeah.
I'm afraid if I go off my notes here, yeah. I'm never going to get back to them. So, look that up, folks. Let us know. I'm going back here. But I like the fact that they very much, like, talked about other people who worked on it and how that makes things happen. So we are to Will's recreation, his first time post prison.
Oh yeah,
when he's doing his recreation.
Yeah, and he only recreates sort of how the body was taken care of because that's all the information he has.
Yeah,
the scene. Like he never recreates the actual murderer's thoughts.
I wonder if in part is because it ends up like the person who did it, Clark Ingram, is like so emotionally shut down. Like it's almost like he has no emotions, but Peter has so many of them that's what he can pick up on through his empathy is like not the why of the killing, but the why of everything else.
Right.
Which I did happen when I was looking up stuff. A detail is that Peter's name is taken from St. Francis of Assisi's real name.
Yeah.
I was like, I love little details like that. I should really look up the trivia more often.
Yeah.
And that they had the actor, Jeremy, whose last name I can't remember.
He's so great, and he's I can't great. Remember, and I'm on IMDb because I did just look up Chris Byrne, who did do American Gods and Hannibal, and Star Trek Discovery.
Oh.
Which I haven't seen, but...
I can't remember yet.
Ah.
Jeremy, what's his face? Yeah. But they said that he did work with somebody who had the same kind of brain injury. This is Amy with a correction. We made sure to look up later that the actor who plays Peter is Jeremy Davies. We can't believe that we forgot his name. And from later reports from Red Dragon Con, apparently he is incredibly delightful in person and people really enjoyed that he was able to make it as a guest at the last minute. So we apologize for that mistake and back on with the show. To develop the character.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's such a good actor.
Yes. And I know that there is a lot of very excellent criticism about not having differently abled actors cast for parts.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in this instance, they did I don't know if good's the right word. maybe sympathetic portrayal. Like it didn't feel sensationalist or or anything like that. And then we got to see him briefly as Jesus. I remember when I saw his cast as Jesus, I was like, hey, yeah, exactly. I had noted here that they really draw the parallel. I mean, the parallels between Peter and Clark and Hannibal and Will are like, so they're pretty much like hammered home every single time. Like the fact that Peter's only concerned about who he can help. Mm-hmm. He can only help the animals. Mm-hmm. And Will is like kind of the same way. Yeah. Like he's like, I have to, like, I'm doing this so I can help people.
Yeah.
Even though in season one, even though it's destroying me.
But are you really though, Will?
Certainly not helping himself.
Like, Peter, I believe. Like when he says, I'm doing this to help people, I'm like, okay, I believe that. It seems like you're that kind of guy. I don't know that I believe that.
Oh. Yeah, and then they're into the next scene with Will and Hannibal where it's like, I said Will's understanding how Hannibal wants him or waited for him to be reborn through therapy.
Oh, this is the therapy scene?
Yeah.
We're at where they're, which is another part where I can't help but be influenced by all the fandom that came after it because it's like, it's that classic.
How would you kill me?
Yeah. With the song. What is that song? I don't know.
Wrecking Ball?
No, no.
Oh.
So it's the How Would You Kill Me, like with my hands, and then it's the song plays the.
I don't think I know this. Is this a meme I've missed?
No, you've seen it. It was one of the first ones that came out. It's hysterical.
I totally don't remember.
All right.
Yeah. I'll look it up.
I'll send you the link.
I'm looking at the notes from the viewing where that they did 8 different takes for this scene, and the one that ended up making it was like perfect all the way through.
Wow.
So I guess they were like didn't have to do a bunch of editing once they nailed it. It was good. Like, oh, it's like super subtle, smug Hannibal.
Yeah, and all his little smiles every time Will, like, he gets an answer out of Will that he likes, that obviously Will is feeding him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I noted, I was like, Will asked Hannibal not to lie to him, and Hannibal asks him to do the same, and he doesn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you're a shit, Will.
But Will is all about sins of omission. There are so many questions he doesn't answer throughout the series.
Yeah, they both do.
Yeah.
Hannibal let stuff drop all the time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it's just a thing of, like, not... Yeah, like, let people paint their own pictures.
Yeah.
Of everything. I had here the whole fantasizing about killing you with my hands. I was like, Hannibal loves it. Total turn on.
Yeah.
And the finally finding you interesting.
Oh, I know. That he, like, goes back to that first meeting and, like,
and the way he delivers that. It, he's like, I finally found you interesting, but it's not like a nice way of saying it. He's like, you know, there's like sort of a like almost like a challenge and kind of a disgust to it.
He's like, yeah. And still Hannibal gets that little smile.
Yay, Dark Will. Yay, Dark Will. My favorite.
Yay, both of them. And I mean, later on, God, this episode is so damn good because later on, when they walk into the barn together and like they're confronting the social worker guy out of the horse, it's such like they're such a power couple.
Oh,
like
yeah.
For the first time, you see them as a power couple because you're like, oh man, those are the last two guys you want to see if you're climbing out of
horse. Yeah, when Hannibal steps aside, Will's there. Yeah. It's like, oh shit. Yeah. No, it just reminded me of the I'm like waving a piece of paper around in the air. And Goblin, that hole at the end of episode 3 when they're walking to save her and they're like walking down that road.
I know.
And I was like, if you saw that coming to you, I'd be like, fuck this shit, I am leaving.
A Goblin and a Grim Reaper.
Yeah. I gotta go find my illegal download of that show and finish rewatching it.
But yeah, it's that same kind of thing. It's like, oh no. Like, mm-mm.
You are a sheep and they are wolves.
Yep.
And you're fucked.
Yeah, and like just Hannibal saying it, that I know we're skipping ahead, but Hannibal saying it, like, I would get back in that horse if I were you. Yes.
Well, when, Hannibal would get back in the horse, but he'd also be turned on by it at the same time. I know it kind of all like works up to that because they have, they find all the bodies. I like how they sort of gloss over how they find all these bodies. They're right. Like, well, we did a soil test and then we did a methane test and there they all were.
Boom, there they were. 80 million bodies.
But I did like, I feel like they did a good job of like, and it was smart to do the Zeller apology because it sort of wrapped up like what could have been something that was kind of hanging there. Like, if they hadn't, I think.
I thought that was good, not only for the apology, but also to just acknowledge that Bev Verley's death was still having ramifications. Mm. And it wasn't just, we killed off this character and served that purpose and whatever, we're moving on. Like, the characters are still relevant, working through that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
It's like, good.
There's another Margot and Hannibal. That's the "it's fine to be weird" line. Which is great.
This episode is so iconic.
I remember having quotes are from it.
Yeah.
Will goes and talks to Peter, which I really liked that scene. Just seeing Will like be compassionate to somebody is really nice. And how like Peter's able to deal with him, like, because Hannibal's so intimidating. And I'm sure that Peter picks up on the fact that Hannibal is not that far off from his social worker. And the way that Will is able to help and believe Peter and the way that nobody did it for him.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I've got your back.
Also, just watching those two actors, because they're two amazing actors. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always apparent with Mads and Hugh, but to see it with, like, you know, Hugh and somebody else.
Yeah.
That's that kind of level of
interaction.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about the fact that we went to New York. We'll talk about this. Yeah.
Okay.
Then Alana's questioning Clark Ingram. God, he is so gross.
Yes.
He, like, if I met that man in person, I would be like, fuck you, and walk away. I mean, I wouldn't literally say fuck you to his face because he'd be able to tell he's a psychopath. But, like, he reminds me of a salesman. Like, he's selling who he wants people to think he is.
Yeah, and he's so unbothered by the whole thing of sitting in the FBI being questioned. Like, he could care less and he knows he's going to get away with it. I couldn't help but think of, like, our political situation nowadays and be like, yep, that's, like, what's happening.
People what is like, it? I would go through life with the confidence of a mediocre white man. That is an excellent example.
Excellent example of...
And he's just sort of like bland, you know, he's made himself seem like this totally bland, affable person, and he's this manipulative piece of crap, and we hate him. And he lets all the animals out at Peter's, and that fucking sucks.
It's terrible.
They're in the car. I said... My notes don't make any sense. But I will tell you from the recap that that's what's actually driving that car. And they said they had five people stuffed in it because they had like three camera sound people in the back seat.
Three people hidden in the back seat. Yeah. And then them in the front and Maz actually driving through the snow.
Yeah.
Like a boss.
Because he's from Denmark. Actually, I don't know what the weather's like where in Copenhagen. I don't know if it gets real snowy there.
I don't know. But that road looked bad.
Yeah.
Like there's at least like a packed 2 inches of snow on that road.
But we're also from Maryland.
I would have never driven.
No, because I'm a wimp. I'd be like, I can't come to work. Sorry. I can't do this. It was not relevant to the storyline, but the next note I had from the reviewing was Michael Dougherty talking about when they got notes from NBC about the shows, Brian would just throw them away and tell the crew not to worry about them. He'd run interference, take care of anything.
That's fabulous.
So, yeah.
That makes me so happy.
I know. He's like, we'll listen to what they say, but we're not necessarily going to follow up on it. I know. It was great. Great.
Brian Fuller, our Lord and Savior.
I know. He's doing a good job. Yep. Hey, Justin, could you put some wood on the fire? Our Hugo might die down.
Oh, I know. We're running out of Hugo.
I know. If anybody's wondering, Hygge is that Danish word you see that's spelled H-Y-G-G-E. And we only know how to pronounce it from seeing Mads's Carlsberg commercial. It's the part when he's bicycling down the picnic table of people.
I think that's a fine place to get correct pronunciation from.
Now if I could just pronounce his name correctly, I'd be golden. I still can't. I screwed up. So, yes, the is your social worker inside that horse. I feel like I want that on a t-shirt. I don't even know what I want it on.
I'm sure that you can buy it on a t-shirt.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because it really is, like, the best way to describe a, or, like, to sum up a just fucked up situation.
Yeah, it should become some sort of slang.
Yeah, for like shorthand.
Something super messed up.
Social work is the worst. What?
Yet complicated and philosophical.
Yes. But I noted that Peter was able to reject the grooming.
Yeah.
Of Ingram. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is kind of a, you know, something you could debate about Will in a way, like how much is he influenced by Hannibal, mm-hmm. and how much is him and how much was he able to push back against it? And because by the end of the season, he's like, or as he says in season 3, he wanted to go away with Hannibal.
Yeah.
So is it because of Hannibal's influence? Is it his own, who he is? Who knows?
It's the debate of the ages.
I know.
I have my opinions.
But. Well, you can have them right here and right now. But you're holding that opinion for later on down the line.
No. I mean, I don't know. It changes. I think it shifts. But like with this, I mean, so yeah, there's these great little mirrors held up between the relationships of Peter and his social worker and everybody. And, yeah, I think the difference is just what you said, that Peter's able to resist it because of his nature is one of caring for things and wanting to mm-hmm. help. And I don't think that's true with Will.
Yeah.
I don't think Will is a good person. And I think he uses that excuse that he's helping people for what's really underlying it, which is he kind of get a kicks out of retribution and he gets a rush out of it and he likes it.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I think that's a good summary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I am on Team Dark Will, but I'm also on Team, like, Will's not a nice person. I've never taken him. I think that's why when people make him too fluffy, mm-hmm. I'm like, he's not mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
He may not have never been like this without his job or without Hannibal, mm-hmm. but I don't think he's necessarily, like, great.
No, and I kind of love that both Hannibal and Will in the show, we don't get a big backstory, so we don't have like, oh, they're wounded because of this and this and this, and mm-hmm. this is why they're why they do these horrible things. That I like that. It's just like, yeah. No, they're this way.
And I've seen
both of them,
because you end up with more of a backstory for Hannibal because the books,
mm-hmm.
but people will give more of a backstory to Will, and sometimes people will work in like an abuse background, yes. or something, and
yeah.
and I'm like, I guess it just like that doesn't necessarily work for me, mm-hmm. because I like the idea of him just being mm-hmm. who he is,
yeah,
for reason.
Yeah, and I like that they didn't bring a whole lot of the Misha storyline mm-hmm. into, and I mean I know that Brian Fuller didn't like a whole lot of what was in that book and had mm-hmm. plans to redo it, but which reminds me of, I wish I could remember who put this on Twitter, but somebody was talking about like dealing with trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder and how Hannibal's able to deal with trauma by saying, if I just eat one more person, everything will be okay.
That'll be the magic person.
Like, that's his way of coping. If I just eat this one more human, things are going to be fine. Or I'm not going to have any more trauma.
Or just the right one.
Or just the right person. Yeah, I mean, just eat the right person. Like, how fucked up is that?
Thank you, Justin, for taking care of our fireplace emergency.
How do you say it?
Hygge.
Hygge. Hygge Restore.
Yes. And the line when Peter's like, oh, I didn't kill him, and the look on Will's face, there was such great expressions. Like,
yeah.
Hannibal's face when Ingrams comes crawling out, he's like, I mean, it's like unfiltered. He's like, this is disgusting, and I've done some disgusting shit, and this is gross.
I really feel like for the whole series, that's the one scene where we might have been seeing Mads and not Hannibal.
Yeah. No, except for when he gives the finger to the scene in the Mason.
Oh yeah, yeah. When Mason is tripping. Yeah, yeah, that's pure Mads Mikkelsen. Yeah.
But the I know there's just, it's like a side shot. He's got his head sort of pulled back and this look of like, what the fuck? It was so funny. But I said also, it's like, it wasn't like he was surprised. Mm-hmm. He was just gross out. And this, and my whole summary of this entire scene was so gay. So gay. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just, between that, the just, what, internally screaming, kiss him.
I know.
Though I saw a thing on, I remember it was, it might have been on Reddit, mm-hmm. where somebody was asking about the catching the hammer on the if that's mm-hmm. possible. Mm-hmm. And somebody, like, knew someone who shoots guns and all.
Oh, right.
Like,
it totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be. You have really good reflexes, and, but it is.
Like Hannibal does.
Yeah. But yeah. And I like the fact that he looks like he does it, but there's a little look on his face of like, I didn't know if that was going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole iconic scene now where Hannibal pulls Will in and, you know, cradles his head and does the whole chrysalis speech. That was Mads's direction, right? Wasn't it? Or was it the director? I think it was, I can't remember, but he talked about it. And he said it was a very, like, not in the script and of the, like, during filming decision to do that and frame it that way on purpose. Now that I'm talking about it, I'm pretty sure it was the director's decision. Because when he talked about it at Fanable Fest, people were like, thank you.
You're great. I don't have anything that says that. I have that. I have that close up of the him stopping the hammer. That was the same Chris Burns who did that in insert shot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the director. What's his name?
Vincenzo.
Said that he wanted like them to be closer and to pull in like that. Mm-hmm. And people were like, "Thank you."
Yeah, that was great. It's such a beautiful frame of like how they're so close, and the is it you're the art major,
yeah,
negative space that's happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but how like sort of the whole, like for me when I look at that scene, my eyes go from sort of Hannibal's forehead to behind his head, around the bottom of the shot, up and over and into Will, like so it just kind of flows the whole thing. It's great and sexy.
It's like a sexy yin yang.
I'm not gonna lie, super artsy, also sexy. And I said the music that they use here, I'm wondering if I just forgot his name. Who's the music guy, producer Justin?
Oh, Brian Retzel.
Yes, Brian Retzel. If you listen to it, the first beats and stuff, I think he reused it for Love Crime or something similar. That sort of beat and everything. Which is great because it's the same sort of face, close, pulled in.
Thing.
Yeah. Thing. Sexy thing. Gay thing. Artsy thing. All of it. So, yes. And then I'd forgotten that it cuts.
Yeah. They're like, that's it. This is just enough.
Because you need to sit with your feelings for a little while till next week or whenever you watch the next
one. Now watch this Tide commercial. Yeah. You're like, no.
I have to say, watching the K-dramas, that's something nice is the product placement might be glaring and weird at times, but at least you're not cutting to a weird commercial where you're like, here's your really deep scene. Ta-da! I know, I do hate that. So, yes, that was Sue Saikana. It was a great episode.
God damn, what an episode.
I know. And it just keeps going until the end of the season. Oh.
Yes. Yes.
I think we still wanted to watch the finale, do a live watch of the finale with friends, and we're working on getting that set up. We might have to record it now, I think, and then do it and then save it for later.
I can't wait. I'll watch that episode anytime.
I know. I just need a couple of shots first, which then makes my reactions more amusing.
You're just going to be silently crying. I know.
That's what I did the last time I watched it. So did you have any other thoughts or anything about it?
No.
No, it's great. And it was great seeing it with people who worked on it.
Yeah, that was really awesome. I hope that continues if there's another Hannibal Fest.
I think I said that they were going to try to do 3 episodes to watch with them. And I feel like I would like it if it was 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. But they would allow, if there was more time built so that they could stop. So maybe even only 1 episode. I would be fine.
Yeah, it was getting really late, I remember. And we're just like, oh my God, it's been a day.
But if they were, because I would love it for them to be able to stop the playback and be like, hey, we're going to talk about this right mm-hmm. here. As opposed to trying to cram the commentary in mm-hmm. around. Mm-hmm. You know, if they did that again, it'd be fabulous. It's also kind of crazy, like when we're at Fannibal Fest and they're, like they do the cocktail hour and everything. We decided to do that. And there's like, all the guests, well, I think whoever, and any of the guests that wanted to come were like there at that part. Mm-hmm. So people talked about, they just like were talking to them mm-hmm. about stuff about the show and all, which is, and I think it's fun. Like people behind the scenes don't often get to be, have such a fuss made over them.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning of this whole thing where they were going to do, they were kind of like, you really want us to talk over this? And
yes,
here's microphones.
Yes,
go for it.
It's gonna be great. And that was, I mean, like I said, the whole thing with Janice being so involved. Mm-hmm. And she said, she's like, who cares about the food? They're like, we do.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so awesome. So I'll pop this in here. We went to New York City right after the weekend after Thanksgiving mm-hmm. to see Hugh in Apologia is how is it? It's
Apologia.
Pronounced.
Apologia.
Yes. With Stockard Channing. And it was really good.
He was amazing.
He was amazing. They were both amazing. Everybody, I feel like everybody did a great job. The one actress who plays his character's fiance is, I think it's the character. I think it was how the character was being played. And I didn't like it.
Yeah, I found I know part of the whole idea of her character was to be grating and like cringeworthy.
Yeah.
But it came across in a really insincere way or like it wasn't organic.
Mm.
And everybody else's acting felt pretty organic and mm-hmm. like grounded, and hers wasn't grounded. It was really jarring mm-hmm. when she delivered a line, so.
Yeah, I think she was kind of supposed to be this person who sort of dropped into this scenario, mm-hmm. this really bizarre scenario.
Yeah.
But it was, I said, I was having the moment where I'm watching Hugh on stage being like, he is a real person. Because, you know, we haven't been to any, we weren't at the Red Dragon Con mm-hmm. he was at. And I think people have gone up and seen him do other things in New York, mm-hmm. and we haven't done that. So, and we didn't do the like wait at the stage door because we saw it on a Thursday mm-hmm. and didn't, was that Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, I think it was a Thursday.
Thursday night. It was 6 weeks ago. Who knows what had happened? Word on the street was that they don't come out mm-hmm. on the weeknights. So we didn't feel like, you know, bugging or waiting. But to be like that, you know, he's like a real person. Like you see somebody on the screen and you logically know that they're real, but it's different when you actually
he's
like
real and he acts real good.
Yeah, his acting was great. And it was also because he had a British accent in the play mm-hmm. different than his own.
Well, and both of them are kind of a little different too, weren't they? Because he played
two different characters,
two brothers. And one of them was really like had kind of emotionally distanced himself from everything. And the other one was just kind of a mess mm-hmm. and the identified patient of the family that everybody worried about. And very Will Graham-esque.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
It was kind of a Waiting for Godot sort of situation? Yeah. Or what's the guy who did Best in Show?
Christopher
Guest.
Christopher Guest. The one he had that's the, I can't remember which movie of his. Waiting for Guffman, yeah. I was like, is it Waiting for Godot? No, it's not. But that thing, there's this person that you're constantly hearing about. And he does show up in this.
Yeah.
But
with a bloody hand, all messed up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and he's very, like, delivers all the, like, the story of the trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was very Will Graham-esque.
Yeah. But it was good.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did some artsy shit. We went to New York and we ate lots of food and walked around and did some shopping and ate a lot more. it was pretty much we went with our friend Brooke, so it was very much an us vacation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Good times.
And then, so I left this for now, the whole Red Dragon Con.
Oh my gosh.
Shit show. I put fiasco in the notes, but really it's a shit show of Hugh appearing or not appearing. It's like Schrodinger's Hugh Dancy appearance. He's both there and not going to be
there.
Someone
should do a timeline of exactly what went down because, yeah, it's very strange. So it was announced on Star Fury. And then at some point it was taken down.
It was announced on their Twitter, but I happened to notice because that was, I want to say, early fall. And then somebody asked at some point over the fall, or somebody pointed out that the Twitter announcement had been taken down off Star Fury's site. And at that point, I looked up their website and noticed no guests were actually listed on the website.
Yeah, but he did delete that. And then, and then got really nasty to people who asked him why he deleted it. And
by he being Sean, who runs Red Dragon Con.
Yeah, Sean, who runs Star Fury events. And it got really nasty and said, well, we don't need to advertise because the event sold out now, because he had announced Mads Mikkelsen as well at that point. And said, well, you know, I just took it down because we don't need to announce it anymore, was his reasoning for it. And then some people started to get kind of like, wait a minute, what's going on?
Because some people had gone up to see Apologia and had asked Hugh about, or mentioned, we're excited about seeing you at Red Dragon Con, and he seemed confused that he was appearing at Red Dragon Con, and questions to Sean went unanswered. And so one person went and emailed Hugh's management company, who said that they did not have him, you know, they knew nothing about him appearing, or that he had even ever been supposed to.
Right. He had never signed a contract, or he had never been confirmed, or some sort of that. And I know there was some language around, like, well, did he sign a contract and then he wasn't confirmed, or like maybe there's some misunderstanding around that or whatever. But like the whole thing pretty much seemed like he just...
And his management company said that he had already been pre-booked for something because he's in a film that's going to be at Sundance.
Yeah. So, and that's the other weird thing. So he's got this thing. He's going to Sundance that weekend. But Sean's excuse for him not being there was that they basically, Hugh Dancy's wife, Claire Danes, was going to start filming. And so childcare was an issue.
I think they're at the point where childcare is no longer an issue when they have work commitments.
Really?
Pretty sure.
And that is also really insulting and strange to make up some excuse that obviously was not their actual excuse for why he wasn't going to be there and bring his family into it.
Yeah.
That seems kind of fucked up to me.
This is a situation where you're like, you just say less. You do not say more. Say less. You just like, it didn't work out.
He keeps saying more and more and more. And what came out during this whole thing is that this guy, Sean, who does the Star Fury events, has been mean and nasty to people in the fandom for a long time. And people put up with it because he runs a con that we love to go to. And it's like the one time a year when a lot of people can gather, especially people in Europe. Can afford to go to something over there where they can gather together and be with their fandom family. And so they are, I think, very much afraid to rock the boat because he bans people. If he doesn't like somebody, he will ban them from the event. So nobody wants to say even a single thing against it because then they're going to be banned from something that they really love.
Well, and the person who, oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I think it's an awful, I think he's narcissistic and holds this sort of power of I run this thing that you guys love and so you have to obey me and not question me is incredibly shitty.
Well, and it sucked because before we went to Red Dragon Con, when he was saying something about guests and people, I think you said, oh, it would be great if Mads could ever be there. And he was basically gaslighting you, like,
well, if I have him, it's not going to sell enough tickets or something like that. But then he talks about how great it is that he's going to be there and how this event is.
Yeah, last year he was like, oh, I could never afford Mads Mikkelsen and
I'd never sell enough tickets.
And then, I never sell enough tickets and you guys don't buy tickets or whatever. And he does a lot of that too. I noticed, another thing he was doing on that, the Red Dragon Con Facebook page was pitting. Now, he didn't mention any other fan cons or anything, but he was pitting European fanables against American and Canadian fanables by saying, like, well, some people are just jealous because they can't afford to come over here and go to this fabulous event, and so they want to talk against it. And,
which is bizarre because a lot of people go to both.
And just really, like, coming up with a bizarre, untrue, strange reasons why he is always in the right. And this whole thing, I mean, we've kind of hinted about it before. I think we've talked about stuff before on the
podcast.
I think
we talked straight up when we went. We were like, well, we had a great time. We'd never go again.
I was like, fuck that. Wait, and saying I'd never go again is also, I understand if people live in London or live in the area and want to go, I don't fault them at all. I mean, if Mads Mikkelsen is going to be there, like, and your fandom's going to be there, fucking go for it. Like, there needs to be a better.
Yeah. For me, it was thing. when he was announced and Mads was announced, there was a little moment of like,
yeah.
And then I was like, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. I can't give this person my business. And also, so the person who approached Hugh's management company, which is public knowledge, you can look up his management company and message them. Received an email from Star Fury, from Sean, that said that because they were spreading gossip online, this person had already bought a ticket for the event, that they were now banned from the event. And it's like, it's not gossip if you're just sharing an email that you got from somebody with
factual
information.
You've paid money for an event. You want to know what's really happening because you're not getting answers. It's not gossip.
Nope.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah. And then the management company actually like saw the tweet, as they said, must have looked up the person on Twitter to find the tweets because they were not tagged or anything in them and apologized, I think multiple times in the Twitter thread being like, we're really sorry about this misunderstanding. Mm. Like we didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
That's also a good example of good social media interaction versus bad social media interaction. So, yeah, Red Dragon Con. I'm sure people are going to have a fabulous time, whether they're for the guest or their Fanimal family or both. Mm-hmm. I'm also like, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy. It's going to be so busy that I'm kind of glad to not be in that situation.
Well, I'm looking forward to doing, some people are doing a, what's the hashtag? SofaCon.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag SofaCon, where we're all sitting on Twitter reading people's reports. I'm looking forward to that. Always really grateful and happy for people that post stuff that are there onto Twitter for us to like be a part of it. But yeah. Like,
such as the last week's appearances or this earlier this week. I don't even remember what happened. It's all a blur when Mads was up in New York and, you know, his incredible interactions with Fanimals.
Oh, my God.
So sweet. So nice. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if there are future Red Dragon Cons, we never know because Sean always dangles it that he's going to cancel them. And you go. We hope you have a lovely time. Otherwise, I think there are plans for another Fanimal Fest.
Yeah, they don't know dates yet. They don't know if it's going to be like 2019 or 2020. But there's definitely plans.
Yeah. So look them up on Twitter and keep track. So on to our recommendations.
Have any recommendations.
Well, I have two. Okay, so cool. First off, I don't know if we talked about Lizzo on here before. I might have mentioned her.
I don't know.
Lizzo is a singer and rapper. And is it pronounced flautist when you play flute?
I don't know. But she is a professional.
Is that how you pronounce it, Justin?
Not in polite company.
Did I pronounce it wrong?
Yes, you said it.
Okay, I barely pronounced it. From Minneapolis. And she puts out some great
music.
I love her.
Yes, she has a new single out called Juice. The video is fantastic. It's kind of like my 80s childhood watching TV encapsulated into one music video where she is sort of playing like these different characters of like a an aerobics, like somebody doing those TV aerobic shows, or somebody on like a home shopping club, and you know, somebody on a like performing on a soundstage. And it ends, the ending shot is of like a, as if you'd seen a, it used to be those like record clubs where you could like call and get like 10 records for 10 cents. And it's like the last shot of one of those ads. And there's a phone number and people have called it. And if you call, she has a pre-recorded message and then it'll tell you like where to go to sign up to keep getting updates.
Ah!
I think she was saying on her Twitter that it's the first, I think it's her first charting single.
Wow.
Which is cool. Yeah. She is, she talks a lot about body positivity, which is really great. She's awesome and talented.
She's fabulous.
Yeah. So check her out. And then I had a note, poet Mary Oliver died this week. And I really liked her stuff. She's very, I think, sort of she's widely popular. But I liked her poetry because I feel like it's very accessible and she really digs into the sort of common, not common, but like the minutiae of life that, like she brings out the details of it. People may know the line from her poem, The Summer Day, which ends with, "Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" Which gets quoted a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That is her. But I like her other, another very popular poem of hers. It's called Wild Geese. And it starts with, "You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the, you only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves." Which I felt like was a very Hannibal sentiment in a way.
It is.
Like, just to like the things that you like. And
I love seeing people post all of her poetry this week. I mean, it's sad that she passed, but it was great that, like, Twitter and Facebook were full of beautiful poetry.
And she also really, like, talked about, she talked about, like, death and things in her poetry and, you know, what, sort of like, you know, facing that experience and things like that. So, if you haven't checked out her stuff, I'd recommend it.
Yeah.
And then I also wanted to end with a different poem. I had sent this to Jen at one point because I said it felt very Hanagram appropriate. It's called A Slip of Heaven. It's by Nicole Lyons, from, I think, 2017 is when it was written. And it's, "I have seen sinners saved from bloody knees and heard angels sing from holy things. But you, my love, are the bells that ring in a heathen's choir when the devil sings."
Fabulous.
Super Hanagram. That sort of heresy and
we should always end with poetry. I like this, Amy.
Well, keep looking it up because I don't know. I don't watch a lot of read a lot of poetry.
I don't
want to watch a lot of it either. I watch it. I come across my Instagram feed and then I ignore it because a lot of it I don't like. But yeah, if you got some good stuff, please.
Okay.
So you can visit Head Full of Hannibal at headfullofhannibal.com, Head Full of Hannibal on Tumblr and Instagram, which I haven't posted to in a really long time, and Head Full of Hanny on Twitter. You can call us at 302-404-HEAD to ask questions, leave comments, or if you have any poetry recommendations, please.
Yes, call us. We still haven't gotten a phone call.
We're still waiting. Got pocket dialed once, never again. So yes. Thank you for joining us. We will hopefully be back on a semi-regularly scheduled posting.
Yes, we're totally doing
it. Some of my other podcasts, the one AMA K-pop pod I listen to just celebrated its year anniversary and they've had right around 50 episodes.
What?
Yeah, I've had a year. They are dedicated podcasters. Kudos to them. We're way more laid back. One of them works at a podcasting.
Here's
company.
What I think is going to happen, Amy. We're gonna slowly inch our way to the point where when they announce season four, we're done with season three, yeah. And like it's going to synchronize yeah. in some amazing so, way.
This is our whole like this is our master plan. That's
what I think is yeah, going
to
happen.
This is our design. It's like if we go slow enough, we'll have a season four to just roll right yep. into,
and then we'll kick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, yeah.
Yeah. Because we'll have to be like
that
weekly.
Shit will be going.
Yeah. It'll be great. Oh, also, next week, Mads' Netflix film Polar releases.
Oh, yeah.
We have to I think people watch are it, right? doing some group watches
yes.
online. So we'll probably retweet about it if you follow us on Twitter. If I get them, I will retweet it. But
cool.
So, yeah. Yay, content.
Yay.
So take care, everyone, and we will talk to you soon. Bye.